Thanks for downloading the free feed of Sunday night's main event. If you'd like the entire show commercial free, please sign up to our Patreon at patreon.com/snmeradio.
And all of these neurologists, every specialist, every doctor I've seen has said the same thing, and it is this. You are cleared.
This is Sunday night's main event.
In clear violation of the law.
With Jason Agnew.
I have a microphone, and I can be louder than each and every one of you.
On TSN Radio.
I'm not finished with you!
Vince turns out the lights. Dana turns into a Florida man, and let the Drake Maverick conspiracy theories blossom. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Sunday night's main isolation. I'm Jason Agnew, solo in the studio once again this week, but I've got a jam-packed show on the way to keep your ears full for the next 2 hours. First up, it's off to San Jose to chat with the editor of the Wrestling Observer newsletter, Dave Meltzer. From there, we make our way to Quebec as Dan the Mouth Lavransky chats with Montreal's foremost wrestling historian, Pat LaPrade, about his new book, The Eighth Wonder of the World, The True Story of Andre the Giant. Along with that, a giant edition of Turnbuckle Trivia. And finally, in Hour 2, the other host of All Elite Weekly, Joe Aguinaldo, joins me to take a deep dive into this week's wrestling TV and a look forward to WWE's Money in the Bank. But before we do any of that, let's dive into this week in wrestling news.
And now, your wrestling roundup on Sunday night's main event.
Well, actually, I guess I should correct myself because we're not starting with wrestling this week. We're actually flipping things upside down, like the world is, and going with MMA to kick things off. With the governors of 5 southern U.S. states doing their best to adhere to President Trump's Operation Open Up America again, UFC has moved themselves out of Vegas and are headed to, guess where? Yeah, Florida, the Sunshine State, where anything is just fine. It appears that Jacksonville, Florida's ViStar Veterans Memorial Arena will be the host of UFC 249 on May 9th, as well as 2 other shows that same week, as the organization will hold 3 events there in 7 days. I guess they're trying to make up for lost time. Wednesday, May 13th and Saturday, May 16th will also have live UFC events thanks to the state of Florida's declaring sports an essential service. But that is not all. If only Ricardo Montalban and Hervey Villachez were still alive, because Fantasy Island is about to turn into Fight Island. Yep, that's not over yet, friends. UFC has filed for a trademark on Fight Island, the term, and Dana White said the organization should be able to run events there starting on this mysterious island in June. Now, as speculated on this show last week, the reason that Fight Island is still in play despite Florida's regulations is for international fighters that aren't allowed into the U.S. due to the pandemic and all of the related travel bans. It's still unclear how they're going to travel to the island and then back home to their countries. But Dana White did say that once they were able to run shows like they used to, the island wouldn't be of use to them. So I guess he's hoping real estate values will go back up and he can sell it. Bellator, on the other hand, is building a set on a Hollywood soundstage, and that is going to house events for both Bellator and Showtime Boxing. Scott Coker hopes to get those events going in July or August. Okay, moving to the world of wrestling now, but very much still coronavirus coping methods. Jacksonville, very popular place nowadays, will also be home to AEW returning to tapings. This is going to happen on Wednesday, May 6th. That'll be the first show the company produces new programming. The May 6th show will air live, with the following week's Dynamite also filmed that day. Then the May 20th program will return live with no plan as of now for what happens after that, though I guess they're taping 2 nights that day as well. So that's a month of taping, so they're going live and then they're going tape the following week. Kind of similar to what WWE is doing. Now, as of right now, the May 23rd Double or Nothing pay-per-view will also be held in Jacksonville, a city that has not seen this popularity since the McDonald's Monopoly game. Has anyone watched McMillions? Anyone binge that? It's all based in Jacksonville, and every time I hear it, I just think of AEW. Just me? Probably not, considering who is listening to this right now, who are wrestling fans, think Jacksonville when you think AEW, and you're all home binging things, so there's a reco for you. Check out McMillions. It's all about the McDonald's Monopoly scandal. 6-part series. Pretty, pretty good. Okay, back to wrestling now as opposed to McDonald's scandals. This, however, is a scandal. The wrestling rumor sites came alive this week with articles about Velveteen Dream in the midst of an indecent exposure scandal. Velveteen Dream, real name Patrick Clark, issued a statement yesterday denying the allegations of inappropriate behavior that were made against him. He wrote this on some of his social media. Be assured, I did not communicate inappropriately with anyone. A private photo of mine was shared without my consent or knowledge, and I'm working with a third party to look into this matter. That ended his quote. Now, the allegation surfaced when a Reddit user claimed that Dream was sending them and their friends messages of a sexual nature through Instagram direct messaging. The Reddit user posted a censored screenshot of a nude photo that Dream allegedly sent them and claimed that Dream blocked them after they wouldn't send him a nude photo back. These people that are participating in this are all said to be underage. And there was a brief audio clip that was allegedly sent by Dream that was also posted to Reddit. At this point, WWE has not commented on the situation. We do not have full-out confirmation on the situation either. This just popped up on all the rumor sites the other day. The statement was also reported on the Wrestling Observer website. I'll bring it up to Dave in the next block. But at this point, WWE, once again, not commented on the situation. It just seems to hit all over the place, so I wanted to mention it. But right now, we do not have a confirmation on it. WWE had their quarterly investors call on Thursday afternoon. Prior to this, they released their 2020 Q1 numbers showing 60% year-over-year net revenue growth to $291 million, with average WWE Network paid subscribers hovering in the 1.46 million range. Now, keep in mind, these stats are primarily before the coronavirus got in the way of their business, and it also includes their escalating TV rights fees that they are now getting. The stock liked all of their report. It jumped from $39 to $45 thereabouts and kind of sits there as of now. Now, despite the WWE being able to spin their Q1 to look positive, Vince McMahon shutting down and declaring bankruptcy of the XFL continues to have fallout. According to The Athletic, lawyers for Oliver Luck filed a lawsuit against McMahon for unspecified damages due to a breach of their contract. The Athletic noted that the suit says that McMahon's Alpha Entertainment filed to have the bankruptcy court reject, quote, certain executive contracts, end quote. That is assumed to mean Luck and perhaps other executives would be due none of their contracted salary. Now, Luck was reportedly due $20 million over the life of his contract. Okay, back to current WWE personalities that don't seem to go away. Along with having whatever the hell the ending of SmackDown was this week, Triple H also appeared on the Corey Graves After the Bell podcast. One interesting note coming out of this was Triple H talking about a 2-night WrestleMania.
I think it was much more enjoyable than the 8-hour extravaganza. I think at some point that is probably what it should be. You know, it's just become so big that it's almost, when you think about it in a way, it started out as a concert that ended up being a festival. And yeah, it's this week-long thing. You know, I think that big main stage attraction needs to be those 2 nights and it'd be this, yes, weekend of events. And I do think that's probably a change that out of chaos comes the genius, and maybe that is the genius of it.
That clip courtesy of Corey Graves After the Bell podcast. Just search it. You can find it. Triple H does an hour with Corey Graves. And there's some interesting stuff in there also about how they prep for the Undertaker and AJ Styles match. Coming out of that, though, obviously the most important part is that last line talking about continuing on with 2 nights of WrestleMania. We'll see if it happens as far as next year goes, because all intentions point to the WWE trying to fill a stadium again. It's probably going to be some joyous, hyped up event that they'll say they're the first ones to be doing this, when in actuality, by that point, they probably won't be the first, but that won't matter in the WWE universe. Anyhow, along with that, it may very well happen in Tampa again, because it looks like the LA stadium construction, because they were supposed to be in LA next year, well, that stadium has been delayed due to the coronavirus. So we will keep on top of that. At this point, we don't know when WWE is going to return to doing big events anyhow. Continuing on and back over to AEW we go. Cody Rhodes is trying to once again be Cody Rhodes. As you may remember, upon leaving WWE, he started to go by Cody, since WWE owned the name Cody Rhodes. Well, WWE had owned the rights to the name since filing for it in June of 2007, but Fightful.com has reported it expired in October 2018. And then there's a six-month grace period after that, but that's done as well. And WWE didn't seem to do anything, so Cody took action and filed for that trademark. So perhaps, sooner or later, Cody Rhodes will once again be Cody Rhodes. And finally, the team formerly known as The Revival in WWE now looks to be called The Revolt. Cash Wheeler, aka Dash Wilder, posted up a teaser on his Twitter with the catchphrase, "Fear the Revolt." So that seems to be what they are going by. No word yet on when or where. Come on, it's going to be AEW. They are going to debut. But they should really hold off on these guys until we get fans in the stands. There's no need for them to debut without anyone there. It doesn't make sense. They will be hot when they debut, but let's get fans in stands before that. And that could be a while away. Right now, it's just going to be another very anticlimactic debut, much like Matt Hardy, much like Brody Lee. We don't need another one. Hold off on revolting, AEW. Hold off on revolting. We are done the news pack. I say we. It's me. I'm done the news pack. Gonna come back. Dave Meltzer will join me next. Don't forget Joe Aguinaldo in our second hour. And Pat LaPrade speaking about his new book, The Eighth Wonder of the World, The True Story of Andre the Giant. He'll be chatting with Dan Lavransky. All of that still to come as you are listening to Sunday Night's Main Event, and doing so on TSN Radio.
Hello, Gordy Levesque here. No one swings and hacks like I do. And no one struts quite like I do, too. And no one brews beer like Great Lakes do. Canuck Pale Ale. My beer, your beer. Our beer. Available in over 400 LCBO and grocery store across Ontario for only $2.80. Great Lakes Brewery. Brewed for you, Ontario.
It's time! It's time!
It's time for the Wrestling Observer Insider.
Guess who's back? Guess who's back?
With Dave Meltzer on Sunday Night's Main Event.
Welcome back to Sunday Night's Main Event. Let's take a deeper dive into the news. We are joined, as we are each and every week, by Dave Meltzer of the Wrestling Observer Newsletter. Dave, how goes the isolation?
It's fine. It's the same as every other. This week's the same as every other week, so it's fine.
I know that you're.
This may be the first week where I'm not overloaded with news, though. I mean, it's actually pretty been. It's been by the standards of the last month. It's been pretty quiet since Thursday.
You being in California, I know you're a big cyclist. Are you allowed to ride your bike and like go out and
yes.
hit? You are okay.
Yes, we're allowed to ride our bikes. Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah, so and just... I do it. You know. I mean, I was doing it pretty regularly until, the last couple of weeks have been so much news, yeah. So I haven't done that much, but yeah, I try.
Well, listen, Dave, if you were on a bike in Florida, you'd be able to do whatever you wanted to do. Maybe go to some stores, get your nails done, do all of that, because Florida and Georgia are opening up, and it looks as though, despite Dana White saying he was going to run in Vegas, it looks like UFC is now Florida-bound.
Jacksonville, Florida. Yeah, UFC and AEW are basically taping, half a mile apart.
That's interesting. Jacksonville's a real hot spot between this and McMillian's.
Yeah.
Have you seen that yet?
No.
Oh, it's that documentary that was on HBO about the Monopoly scandal, and it was all based in the Jacksonville FBI. So Jacksonville getting a lot of play with this isolation. So Dana going there, just Florida is just flooded with all of these organizations, and I don't know if that's necessarily a good thing considering the population of Florida.
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing is they're sort of going to be, I think that they're for the most part going to be isolated.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that they're opening, you know, I think the opening up other stuff is a lot more dangerous than opening up, you know, certainly pro wrestling. Fighting is a different issue. You know, that's a real weird one. I mean, the one thing, you know, that the contradiction that I can't get past is that, you know, the Association of Ringside Physicians, you know, came out with a paper explaining nobody should be fighting right now. And that actually, you know, also pertains to pro wrestling, but they don't have, in Florida, let's just say, they don't have they're not a governing body over pro wrestling.
Right, okay.
Even though that's the physician's papers that none of these events should be taking place. The Association of Boxing Commissions, the commissions themselves, canceled their meeting, their annual meeting in Sacramento because it's too dangerous. So the commissions have said it's too dangerous to have a meeting, okay?
Right.
But the Florida Commission has said that it's okay to have fights. Now, I can't, you know, that's unique because the reality is that the California Commission has said no. The reason that they're in Florida is because the Nevada Commission has said no, because they wanted to run all these shows in Vegas. So it's not like all these commissioners are, you know, hypocrites and all this, but Florida, I mean, it's like you can't even, them sanctioning it really, it really shows a lot of gall in my mind that, you know, again, like your commissioners are saying that going to Sacramento for a meeting is too dangerous at this time. And then not even at this time, this is end of July when the meeting is, but fights, you know, where things in theory by the end of July, things should be a little bit better than they are now. But fights in 2 weeks are fine.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense. But it's going to happen in Florida. But Fight Island is still in play due to non-American fighters not being able to get in and out of the country. How is Fight Island going to work? And do we know where Fight Island is, Dave?
No, we don't know. We don't really, you know, it's hard to say, but you know, that could be a that could be a real big problem. But people are flying in and out, you know, so it's like that's not a good thing anyway.
No.
But, you know, they need that money, and you know, I mean, unlike with WWE, which is financially in really good shape, you know, Endeavor is in financially terrible shape. And UFC is its most profitable thing. And Endeavor also runs, you know, PBR, the Bull Riding Association. And they even ran this past weekend.
Oh, wow.
They ran, it's this weekend, so the first day was yesterday.
Hmm. You mentioned WWE is in good shape, and they put out their quarterly report this week. They did so after the market closed, and that led to speculation with that announcement that the stock was going to drop, but it did not. It actually went up about 15%.
Way up. Yeah, I mean, the company is really profitable.
Yeah.
I mean, now, granted, this quarter, for the most part, wasn't that affected by COVID, but it was the last 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like there's no effect. And, I mean, the one thing that we did see is that the WWE Network, at least through WrestleMania, was not hurt. I mean, it's not like it's through the roof, but it did. Essentially, it did. It's down from last year about 8%, but it's, you know, the growth from December 31st to WrestleMania was almost identical this year to last year. So, you know, it's like the last 3 weeks, they weren't bad for the network. I mean, there's no sign, you know, of lots of cancellations or anything like that. Now, you know, again, the more important thing is what happens forward. Obviously, no house shows, that completely changes their business. But, you know, and the ratings are down, but that didn't show up in this quarter, really, because the first couple of weeks of the, you know, the empty arena shows did not do that badly. Now they're really doing badly.
You know, you'd expect WWE Network numbers to actually increase in the pandemic because
you could make that argument.
Netflix,
they haven't increased either.
Look,
you
know, at
they're,
Netflix.
They're actually the number that I had predicted had there been no pandemic for the day after WrestleMania, they were actually 6,000 below, which is basically identical. So my thought is that it didn't have an effect, plus or minus.
Well, Netflix has grown huge, and their stock is also showing it, going up almost like $100 during the pandemic.
Yeah.
It's pretty crazy.
You know, now I hear people talk about Netflix constantly, so.
Yeah.
I don't hear people talk about WWE documentaries right now. Although,
nope.
You know, some of them have been very good.
Yep. They have, I mean, outdone by Dark Side of the Ring, which is what most of the fan base that's listening to this show is really diving heavy into Dark Side of the Ring, because they've been excellent. They've been very fun to watch.
Some of them really good. Yeah. I mean, it's the Schultz one's going to be interesting. That's Tuesday. So,
yeah. And Dino was this past week, and as a Canadian, it was interesting to hear more about Dino, even though not necessarily anything new, but just interesting to hear that story told.
Yeah, interesting. Just talking about international wrestling and things like that, which outside of Quebec, nobody really talks about, because Montreal's almost like, when it came to pro wrestling, it was almost like a little island. You know what I mean? Like, it really wasn't, it's like, it's not far from Vermont or anything, but it's like, but it's like in the United States, because it's predominantly French language, it never really got the play that anywhere close compared to Toronto, you know, where Toronto was, you know, in when it comes to U.S. wrestling, based on, you know, the guys that were there and the programs and everything, it was almost, you know, Toronto was basically the United States, you know, another, you know, one of the biggest markets in the United States, even though it's in Canada, whereas Montreal historically was like another world.
Yeah, that actually doesn't just work that way for wrestling. That works that way for all of the star system as well, because there's a distinct French population in Quebec, and they have their own stars. They have their own version of Saturday Night Live there, and it doesn't compete against the English media. So the rest of Canada competes against American media, so it's two different star systems. So I completely understand where, you know, you'd have these performers that are larger in life in Montreal and not necessarily... And then when they would go to another market, they wouldn't necessarily be as big stars there, because we wouldn't know them from the French market.
Right. Like, you know, Bravo was a giant star in Montreal, but he was a star. You know, he wrestled in Toronto and he was a star, but he was like a mid-level star. You know, he wasn't a big-time superstar. Now the one that was interesting, you know, which is completely on another subject, is GSP was actually big in Toronto before he was ever big in Montreal.
That's very interesting. Yeah, that's true. And I mean, when GSP left UFC, all of Canada just stopped.
Died.
You know, it just stopped being interested in UFC. And we saw that here working for TSN. You know, a lot of the program, even though TSN got the contract, they didn't seem to be as interested in covering it without GSP as the figurehead.
Yeah. I'd never seen a guy... Because, like, Michael Bisping was a big star in the U.K., but his leaving really, you know, it was like, and he helped build the U.K. market, but it wouldn't, when he faded out, it's not like the U.K. market died, but it was huge. I mean, because Canada was doing just giant pay-per-view business.
Mm, yeah.
You know, I mean, certainly more with GSP's fights, but overall, I mean, Canada was like 20% of the U.S. at one point, sometimes even 25%. You know, when the population's, like 10, 11%, whatever the number is?
Yeah.
You know, but that's not the case now. Now Canada's still probably, you know, not that far off the United States when it comes to UFC. Maybe a little bit, but with GSP, it was like double, you know, per cap, more than double per cap. I remember I would get the per cap numbers on pay-per-view, and it was always, you know, Vegas and Hawaii, and then, but the biggest were always Toronto, Montreal, Halifax,
that's
Calgary,
weird.
Edmonton,
yeah.
Vancouver. They were always way above anything in the United States.
So strange. All right, we went off on a bit of a tangent there. Let's get back to the news. And I don't even know if we can call this next story news, but the rumor mill was churning this week, a scandal happening, Velveteen Dream, lots of rumors out there. Do we know any facts at this point?
No, not really. I mean, there's certainly a lot of stuff and doesn't look good for him. He's denied everything, but you're going to anyway, right?
Yeah.
So I don't, you know, I mean, I've sent a lot of questions to a lot of people and have gotten no response. So I don't know what that means. You know, I guess in time, hopefully I'll get some response and I'll have a better idea. And I've seen the stuff. It doesn't look good. It doesn't look good.
No, it doesn't. So if that is the case, WWE has Velveteen Dream positioned in the top program with Adam Cole on NXT on USA Network.
Yes.
What do you do if you're WWE? Do you bail out of this? Do you continue status quo?
I think that they need to find out, and if there's nothing to it, and if he's somehow been, misleadingly accused, maybe you slow it down just because it's real hot right now, but you don't bail on it. If it's true, you more than bail on it. If nothing else, the WWE's been completely quiet on this, but obviously they have to be investigating it. They have to. They're not going to ignore this. And, you got to figure out, what's going on. And if there's anything to it, he's got to be gone. I mean, that's the reality.
Yeah. One person that thought was gone, just in the cuts, was Rockstar Spud. I was very suspicious with Rockstar Spud cutting that promo. Drake Maverick, that is. He lost on NXT. Dave, he's getting a lot of attention. I just smell such an angle happening here.
I watched the TV, and I was like, there's no way that at the end he can't get his job back.
Right.
There's no way, right? And this, you wouldn't do this angle, to do this. The funny thing is the people there are telling me it's just like Sarah Logan. It's like, we're going to use him for the 90 days, or at least for the tournament. But no, it's not been rescinded. So I guess we'll find out. If he wins a match, even if it's only one, I would say that, there's a complete angle. If he goes 0-3, probably not. If he goes 2-1, for sure it's an angle. I think that's how I kind of would look at it. But even, it's certainly, when you watch the TV, feels like an angle, but I've had it denied to me, so we'll see.
And Sarah Logan is going to, because she was a big discussion point on Raw, was supposed to be on Raw, so she'll be used for the 90-day no-compete clause type of deal and then just be sent
on
her way?
Nobody knows. Okay. I mean, she was supposed to be, and then it was changed, so they may have just completely dropped that thing. I mean, she was scripted all over Raw, not all over, but she was scripted on Raw to do some stuff with the Viking Raiders. It was taken off the show at the last minute. So I don't know if that means they've dropped it or they just decided to postpone it. I think we'll know that tomorrow, one way or the other. If she's not on the show tomorrow, I would say that the idea has been dropped.
Makes sense. All right, Dave. Well, that's fantastic for this week. You did say you were able to take a breath this week. So what's coming up in The Observer?
That's a good question. If I have time, and I may very well, I think I may be going back and doing a bio. I've got, Rocky Johnson and Pampero Purple bios that I've been wanting to do since they passed away. I mean, I did write stories on both of them, but not detailed stories.
Gotcha.
So that's kind of like the stuff. And also go more into detail on what Vince said at the investors call. I'll probably analyze a lot of that stuff for sure. And then, whatever happens between now and the middle of the week. And Wednesday's probably going to be real interesting just because, we got the AEW tournament, we got the Cruiserweight tournament, and, a lot of answers, I think, on the NXT side, especially with Rockstar Spud.
and we'll see where Velveteen Dream falls into that.
Yeah, well,
lineup,
Wednesday night, no matter whether WWE says something or doesn't, Wednesday night we'll know. If he's not on that TV, that'll tell you something.
Yeah.
And if he's on that TV, that'll tell you that it's got to tell you that they don't believe it, because there are guys they would go to bat for, and you know what I mean? Like UFC would do with Jon Jones, and just, come up with their own internal excuses. He's not that high on the list of guys to where they're going to say that, we're going to protect him if it's real.
Right.
I could be wrong, but that's how I would take it.
Yeah. All right, Dave, we'll look forward to that, and we'll chat with you next week at the same time.
Okay, have a great week.
You too. Find all of Dave's work at WrestlingObserver.com. We are going to take a break. When we come back, let's start talking Andre the Giant and do it in a little bit of trivia. We will do turnbuckle trivia, Andre the Giant style, next right here on Sunday night's main event. Hey now.
If you like Dave Meltzer interview segments, you'll love WrestlingObserver.com. WrestlingObserver.com is your place for the latest pro wrestling and mixed martial arts news 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Subscribers have access to hundreds of back issues of Dave's Wrestling Observer newsletter, plus daily podcasts, including a library of over 9,000 shows dating back to 2005. Check it out today, WrestlingObserver.com.
Bartender Dave here to let all of my bearded brethren know that we are bringing the High Street Beard Care products to North America. From the darkest reaches of South Africa comes the finest beard oils and grooming products known to man. The highstreetbeardoil.ca. To us, beards are not a trend. They are a way of life. We have four beard oil flavors, spicy, woody, citrus, and earthy. A revolutionary beard jelly that'll leave your beard silky smooth and ridiculously attractive. Beard fertilizers that'll help you grow the biggest and most beautiful beard you can imagine. Also beard paste, beard butter, and stash wax. All available at thehighstreetbeardoil.ca. Join us on the high street and spoil your mane.
It's time for everyone's favorite game show.
All I do is win, 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 no matter what.
Go one-on-one and get it done. Sunday night's main event presents...
Everybody hands go up.
Turnbuckle Trivia.
And they stay there. And they say yeah. And they stay there.
It is Turnbuckle Trivia time here on Sunday night's main event. And as I had mentioned, coming up in the next segment, we have Pat LaPrade, the author of The Eighth Wonder of the World, The True Story of Andre the Giant. And... well, he was good enough to give us one of those books. So that is our prize today in Turnbuckle Trivia. And we have two players on the line in order to play for this prize. First of all, we have Patrick on the line from Hamilton. Hi, Patrick. How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I am all right. Your opponent will be Ian from Kitchener. How's it going, Ian?
Good, good.
Excellent. All right, Patrick and Ian, I mean, you guys might have done research and figured out if the prize was this, then what the topic could have been. It will be Andre the Giant trivia, gentlemen. So let's test your knowledge about the eighth wonder of the world. And here we go. Patrick, first question for you. What's Andre's real name?
Andre Rene Rusemont.
That is correct. Very good. All right, Ian, to you. What country was Andre born in?
France.
You bet he was. Patrick, back to you. When Vince Jr. took over the company from his father in 1981, he put Andre in a feud with... in which his opponent was credited for snapping Andre's ankle in a match. Now, it turns out the ankle had been broken earlier, but who was given this credit?
Oh, God, I think that was Killer Khan, I think it was.
It was, yes, the Mongolian giant Killer Khan. Very good. Now, Ian, despite Gorilla Monsoon claiming Andre to be undefeated, he did occasionally lose, including a submission loss in 1986 in Japan. To whom?
Oh, wow. I don't know. I should have done more research. Inoki?
Yes. What a great guess. You got to go with Inoki when you talk classic Japan, right? Very good. Very good. Okay, Patrick, back to you. Andre would then engage in a feud to see who was the true giant of pro wrestling with Big John Studd. What contest did the two men partake in at WrestleMania 1?
It was the $15,000 slam match.
It was a body slam challenge. That's what we were looking for. Very good. Yes, body slam challenge is correct. Now, Ian, this is something I remember growing up. Leading up to Hogan and Andre's match at WrestleMania 3, the two were both in a battle royal on Saturday night's main event. Who did Andre headbutt and bust open, then toss over the top rope? It was so rare to see blood at this time on WWE TV. That's why this made such a big deal.
Sorry, Snuka?
It was not. It was Lanny Poffo that he headbutted and threw out, and Lanny was bleeding. And it was just like, wait, what? There's blood on WWF? That's weird. All right, back to you. Here we go, Patrick. Andre would eventually form a tag team with Haku. What was their team name?
The Colossal Connection.
Yes, it was. All right, here we go, Ian, to you. Andre's final major wrestling appearance in the WWF came at SummerSlam 1991 when he was engaged in a feud with the Natural Disasters, but he could not wrestle due to his declining health. So instead, he was at ringside as the Natural Disasters faced what tag team?
Oh, wow. Oh.
So it's SummerSlam 1991. Natural Disasters versus whom?
Anyway. Bushwhackers.
That is the correct answer, and very sad that that was his final appearance with the Bushwhackers. Okay, we have got a 4-3 lead right now, so that means, Patrick, if you get this, you win. What was the name of Andre's character in The Princess Bride?
Fezzik.
Fezzik is correct, and that means, mathematically, you got a perfect score. You got the win. Lanny Poffo got you, Ian.
Oh, damn. I don't know.
Thank you for playing the game, Patrick. Right. Congratulations. Thanks. You've got a copy of the book. Guys, thanks so much.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Patrick from Hamilton, today our winner, and he is going to be sent this Andre the Giant book. If you want it, it is, of course, available online, and you can get the downloadable copy. That might be easy for you. Personally, I have this fat book in front of me, and I'm going to pop it into the mail for Patrick in Hamilton. When we come back, more on this book, plus more on Dino Bravo. Did you see Dark Side of the Ring this week? A good episode. And one of the gentlemen featured in that documentary will join us / The Mouth next. Yep, Pat LaPrade and Dan Lavransky next, right here on Sunday Night's Main Event on TSN Radio. Right now, you're listening to Sunday Night's Main Event, and you're hearing this ad. Yep, it's a commercial. And it could be your commercial. We've got sponsorship packages available to suit any budget, so I could be talking about what you're selling. For more information, email me, jason@snmeradio.com. Get the message out about your product or service to thousands of listeners via TSN Radio and around the world with our podcast. It all starts with an email to jason@snmeradio.com.
I'm Dan the Mouth Lavransky.
And I'm Joe Aguinaldo.
And we are the old folks, two burnout wrestling fans that have been watching it since the 70s.
But now, All Elite Wrestling is here to make everything old new again.
So what better idea for a podcast to have it covered by two old crusty farts?
It's called All Elite Weekly, and you can listen to it by becoming a patron of Sunday Night's Main Event at patreon.com/snmeradio.
And you can bet we'll cover the good, the bad, and the ugly, because we're the old folks, tough guy.
And his opponent to be making his way down the aisle from Grenoble in the flip-flops, weighing 520 pounds, the eighth wonder of the world, Andre the Giant.
He was the eighth wonder of the world, a truly larger-than-life professional wrestler, and the new book entitled The Eighth Wonder of the World, The True Story of Andre the Giant, profiles Andre's life. It was earlier this week that my regular partner here on the show, Dan the Mouth Lavransky, got the chance to chat with the author of this book, Pat LaPrade. Now, that's a name, if you're any sort of wrestling fan and like a little bit more than just watching the product on the surface, you've heard the name Pat LaPrade. He is the authority when it comes to Montreal wrestling. He's written numerous books, including Mad Dog, The Maurice Vachon Story, Mad Dogs, Midgets, and Screwjobs, The Untold Story of How Montreal Shaped the World of Wrestling. So this is yet another one from Pat, and Dan the Mouth Lavransky got a hold of this book, read it, and chats with Pat here. Plus, we also get a little bit of insight into the Dino Bravo Dark Side of the Ring that just aired this past week. Pat was featured in it, and he's very much Quebec's wrestling historian, period. Like, he is the go-to guy. So here is some of that chat. Dan the Mouth Lavransky with Pat LaPrade.
Before we kind of get into the Andre stuff, I want to talk a little bit about Dino Bravo, because the Vice episode just aired this week, the Dark Side of the Ring episode about Dino Bravo, and you are featured in it. You're one of the people that we see in the show. I was curious when I watched it. I was like, well, the first thing outside of anything that the story has to do with was with you. I'm like, was Dino Bravo like one of those guys that got you hooked into wrestling when you first got into it?
Oh my gosh, you have no idea. It was my first favorite wrestler.
Okay, right. Okay,
oh, yeah,
excellent.
Yeah. I grew up watching Dino. I mean, I started watching wrestling when I was 6 years old, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it was 1982. And Dino was just becoming this big star in Montreal, you know, in 1982. That's when International Wrestling booked the Montreal Forum for the first time since 1976, since, you know, the days of All-Star Wrestling. So, I mean, wrestling was really, really picking up. It was already on TV every Sunday mornings. So my dad brought me to my first show at Pulse Ova Arena, and I was hooked, and I started watching it on TV. And Bravo was this, you know, big star, you know, full of muscles and charismatic, and, you know, the fire he had when he was doing his comeback mm-hmm. in the ring and everything. He was a champion. So mm-hmm. when you're a kid, you know, the champion is always, you know, the one the one that, you know, you will mostly like. You know, the same thing happened with Hogan in the WWF, right?
So right.
I mean, I was a fan of Bravo even before I became a fan of Hogan.
Right.
Because
right.
I knew Bravo first.
Right.
You know? So when I see the documentary that Bravo was like the Hulk Hogan of Quebec, I mean, some people wrote that I exaggerated. I do not. Hmm. I mean, he was that big of a right. deal here in Montreal.
That's amazing. Yeah, no. How did you feel when he passed? If he, I mean, you made it clear he was definitely someone that you really loved. One of the guys that got you into wrestling. Was it a shock to you at the time when he was killed?
I have to say, I don't have much memories of that period of time. And it was the same thing for Andre. I was trying to, like, you know, I was at the time, I was 93, so I was 16 years old. I don't know. I mean, I remember that around that period of time, it's, you know, one of the only time that I got, you know, just a little bit less interest into pro wrestling. So, you know, obviously I've read about it and I probably spoke to my dad about it, but unfortunately I don't have any recollection of that.
Okay. Well, one thing I do know is you do know a lot about Andre the Giant, and you and your writing partner, Bertrand Hubert, have done another one to add to the list with Mad Dog and Mad Dog's Midgets and Screwjobs. Another great book, The Eighth Wonder of the World is what it's called, the story of Andre the Giant. I mean, most of the time when I sit down with an author to talk to him, I usually want to ask what their motivation is, but I think I know what your motivation was, because you really kind of set it up so early in the book. It's like in the introduction. It's not even before you get into the book. And it's basically the mythology of Andre the Giant and how many... You know, I was trying to think after I started reading your book, I was trying to think about who has more of a myth around them than Andre. I can't think of anyone, and I just thought it was great the way that right out of the gate, it's like, all right, kids, I'm going after the mythology, and I'm going to try to do my best to figure out what's truth and what's not true.
Well, we thought it was the right thing to do, right? Because... for so many years, you know, there's so many tales and myths that were told, you know, about Andre, and we were even part of this because you know, I'll make a confession. When you go back to Mad Dogs, Midgets, and Screwjobs, we'll tell you that Andre was born in Grenoble, France,
mm-hmm.
and we debunked that story in an Andre book. But you know, a historical book is a picture of history with the knowledge you have at that particular moment, you know, and at the time, that's what we knew.
Mm-hmm.
We were wrong, but that's what we knew. So we apologize to those who feel like we didn't give them the right information, but now we did with the Andre book, because I mean there were so many out there, you know. I was amazed to see that on his birth certificate,
yes,
it wasn't the name that he was supposed to have, and that everyone is talking about him passing on January 27, when in fact he passed away on January 28. And you know, working on the HBO documentary allowed me to talk to the family, because I was the one interviewing the brothers and friends for the
right.
documentary. So they had debunked some of the stories that, you know, didn't make the cut on the documentary because, you know, obviously there's so much you can do in an 86-minute documentary.
Right, sure,
that's
of course.
That's completely understandable. But we didn't have any time limit for our book, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So we wanted to make sure that all of those myths and all of those tales would be, not only we would tell the truth, but we would try to explain why this tale
where they came from
to life.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. What you know, where it came from. So it was really important for us because we've been reading so, I mean, you've read the WWE book.
Of course.
From 10 years ago.
Of course.
Where in 30 pages, he passed from being born to starting working for Vince Sr. we had 11 chapters for that same period
yeah.
of time.
Yeah.
And the Bucks Brown graphic novel was, I mean, I love that book. Mm. But again, you know, when you read it, there were things there that even before researching Andre, I was like, yeah, this seems off and this seems off. But, you know, it wasn't the goal of that book, you know. So we wanted to do something that would be the most comprehensive and definitive biography of Andre. And, mm-hmm. you know, we think we achieved it.
One final thing before we wrap things up, and thanks so much for talking to me for so long here. Andre's condition, he had that special affliction, obviously, that created him the way he was, and it got worse as he got older. You talk about in the book how he could have actually had the surgery to correct it, and that was something that I never had no idea. I thought it was a more modern procedure, and that career-wise, perhaps Andre thought maybe it wouldn't have been for the best for him to do it. And I found that fascinating. How do you feel about that, Pat? Do you think it would have been any different if he'd had the surgery? Would it have been better? Would it have been worse? Like, I find that whole question fascinating.
There's two things that Andre told Jackie McCauley, who was living with him and Frenchie Bernard,
yeah.
you know, taking care of the ranch. There's two things that he actually told her. One was, God made me the way I am, and I don't want to change it. The other thing was, I'm afraid that I'm going to lose what makes me special. And that was being a giant, having bigger proportions than your regular 7-footer, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that Andre was either misinformed or was really, really just scared of having a brain surgery, because this is what it is.
Right.
It's still a brain surgery to this day. So, but of course it would have changed the whole thing. You know, look at Big Show. He survived more years than Andre because of the surgery.
Right.
So Andre would have kept like, you know, maybe, I don't know, living another 10 years, 20 years. We don't know.
Right.
He would have probably be in less pain, because one of the things that Andre had pain, I mean, he was still growing by the end. And even in 1992, as late 1992, his body was still growing, not in height,
wow,
but in proportion.
Right.
And when he had those growth crises, it was, can you imagine how you know, he was hurting like hell.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it would have stopped that. But at the same time, when he was told, when he was first told about the disease back in 1970 in Japan, I'm sure that he was misinformed, because that's, you know, it was in Japan. It was he didn't speak Japanese. Mm-hmm. He barely spoke mm-hmm. English at the time.
Right. Sure.
Probably there's information that, and if the only thing you understand is that we have to do a surgery to your brain, that's enough to scare many of us.
Right.
And then because when he came to Montreal, he was already saying that he wasn't going to live long, and that's why he was, you know, partying all the time and drinking all the time and everything. So he already knew by then. When he had that ankle injury 10 years later in 81, that's, I think, the time that he should have done it, because he was already out because of his ankle injury. So he should have done it then. But by that point, I think that he already made up his mind that he wasn't going to change, and just in case that his body would be smaller or whatever he thought, it was too late already.
Mm-hmm.
And he never did it. So the reality of the disease was there. And like he always said, he wasn't going to see his 50th birthday, and he died at 46.
My thanks to Dan Lavransky for, of course, doing that interview, and Pat LaPrade for joining him. That interview is actually an hour long. It is an hour long. Those two guys are just kind of hanging out and chatting about Dino, Montreal Wrestling, Andre the Giant, all of that. It will be on our Patreon this week. If you want to hear the whole thing, patreon.com/SNMEradio. It's only a dollar a week, and you get everything that we put onto our Patreon, including the uncut, unedited interviews, which I just posted, the Big Show uncut, unedited, as well as the Mickey James interview that we had last week on the show, which was twice as long as we played on the show. So all of those things, including our weekly podcasts, including All Elite Weekly, myself and Mark Andrada doing the midweek markout, and my trivia show, a bit of my late shift show, all of that is up on the Patreon. Patreon exclusive podcast, tons of them now. So go ahead and get some. Patreon.com/SNMEradio. Only $1 per week. We shall take a break. When we come back, one of the hosts of All Elite Weekly, Joe Aguinaldo, joins me to take a deep dive into this week in pro wrestling TV. It's all empty arena, but we're still watching and we're talking about it next. You're listening to Sunday Night's Main Event and doing so on TSN Radio.